Blog Talk Radio.
5, 6, walking forward. Not yet. Go!
Do you like that opening?
Yeah, it's weird. It always throws me for a loop. I never know what the fuck's going on. Pardon my mouth.
I know, like the theme song with the Goldbergs is like so like upbeat. I'm like, it's kind of like down. Like I want like high, I want something like higher energy. But I just like when she's like, not yet, go.
Yeah.
It's from a behind the scenes.
On the edge of my seat. Oh.
What?
I'm definitely hearing that delay right now. I can hear myself through your speaker a little bit. Yeah, it definitely keeps me on my toes. Now go.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
That's where I like to end it. Anyway, this is and that was awesome. I'm Reuben Wolf.
I'm Sean Gibbs.
Sean, we have a freaking awesome episode. This is season 1, episode 9, Stop Arguing and Start Thanking. And I love this episode because it's our first Thanksgiving episode.
It was a pretty good episode, I have to admit.
The Goldbergs has my favorite Thanksgiving episodes. In fact, fun fact, I think that the Thanksgiving episodes on the Goldbergs are the best episodes of the show entirely. The season three Thanksgiving episode was the first episode I ever saw. I caught it on TV, and after I watched, it's still I think my favorite episode of the entire series. I watched it, I was like, this is my show. Like this is the funniest thing I've never seen.
Damn, I've only got, like, what, about another year of us doing podcasts before I can watch that episode, so I don't have any spoilers?
Yeah, don't spoil anything for yourself. This is it's a really good episode. But this one is up there, too, I think. There's so much – I have so many pages of notes because there's so much to talk about in this episode.
Let's get at it.
Let's do it. So just a – another little backstory. Dan, this is the first appearance of Uncle Marv, or Cousin Marv.
Marvin.
Marvin, yes, played by Dan Fogler, who also starred in the Adam F. Goldberg pen script Fanboys. That was like a little fun fact I found.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's jump right into it, shall we?
Mm-hmm. Dive away.
Yeah, so our opening narration is Patton Oswalt just says pretty much giving up the Goldbergs. And in Call Me When You Get There, Sean, we saw how Bev can go ham on a dish. You remember like when she used all the corn oil from the wok? Yeah.
Yes.
Did you see? So Bev's cooking, and it's, comedically speaking, I thought it was really funny. You have a bit about candied yams, and I wanted to know your take on Bev's candied yams.
Oh, my God. That's one of the first thing I wrote down. It's my kryptonite. It looks like marshmallows had diarrhea all over sweet potatoes. So gross. I hate it. Oh, this is like the first thing she brings up. Like the yams were candied or the... Oh, I could throw up right now and end this session so easily. Oh,
this is basically terrible. The montage is Bev is like massaging a turkey like it's at Club Med. Like a raw turkey with her bare hands, because it's the 80s and there were no germs.
No.
I'm going to call that dish, I'm not going to call it candied yams. I'm going to call it marshmallows with yam. Because it was so
good.
And then we had like broccoli-laced nacho cheese.
Yes, and like, almost everything was coming out of a can, too.
The one can of cranberry sauce, which like is... I don't know, Thanksgiving, like, you have to have the canned-shaped cranberry lump.
Ugh. That stuff always leaked into my mashed potatoes. I would always try to tell whoever was making me a dish when I was growing up, please, I don't want any of that stuff on my plate. They're like, no, it's really good. I'm like, no, please don't. I don't want it in my mashed potatoes. Like, no, and they would always do it, and I would just ruin Thanksgiving. Ugh. Gross.
I love the measuring cup that she's pouring the cheese onto the broccoli is like to the brim with cheese. with melted cheese.
But she looks like she's in heaven though, doing all that. She's like having the time of her life.
Oh, and you know why? Because she's only in this for the credit, it seems.
Oh yeah, totally.
I just want to ask before we move on to that. What are your 80s Thanksgiving memories?
Lots of football because my uncle was a referee for he was such a weirdo. He was a referee for Little League baseball and Little League football and stuff. And so there was always fucking football games going on the TV and the radio at the same time. It was pretty obnoxious. I would say, is that more Christmas time? Is that? I can't remember if Thanksgiving had more football. It would have been basketball or baseball or whatever. But yeah, it was usually just pretty loud, dogs running everywhere. How about you?
My 80s Thanksgiving memories aren't so robust because I wasn't alive.
Oh, well, but, your Thanksgiving.
I want to.
Probably the same. Just loud.
Yeah, my favorite Thanksgiving memories are a lot of fighting. In fact, there was one. I used to come home from college to Buffalo, and I used to go to my aunt and uncle's for Thanksgiving during our Thanksgiving break when I was in college, and they would always be at each other's throats. And I just turned the third or fourth year, I just turned to one of the other guests, and I was like, well, it wouldn't be Thanksgiving if they weren't yelling at each other. You know,
and there's probably a lot of talking shit about them before they got there.
It was, you know, it was always about you're cooking the Brussels sprouts too long.
I love Brussels sprouts, but you know,
me too.
Growing up, I never had fresh Brussels sprouts until I came to the East Coast. They were always in a box and they were always gray.
Ew.
They were yummy, frozen Brussels sprouts. Yeah.
That's gross.
Mm. They're so good.
This episode really, this episode really put me in the mood for Thanksgiving food. I'm ready for the holiday, if there is one. Post-pandemic.
Yeah.
Who knows if there's going to be one.
Be thankful you're not in the grave.
I know. Speaking of thankful, Bev wants to know who the kids are thankful for, and in order. I have an order. Erica is thankful for Bon Jovi's ass.
Yeah, Bon Jovi's ass. Yeah, so good.
Was that you? Were you thankful for Bon Jovi's ass too, Sean?
I think that was. This is tough. Because when Bon Jovi first came out, he was kind of edgy, but then he really went mainstream. And so Bon Jovi was an instant sex symbol, but then he became more of a pop kind of, I was watching a soap opera. I don't know how to explain it, but I there was a time where a lot of us didn't like Bon Jovi for a very, very long time. So how she was referring to him, I probably wasn't into Bon Jovi that much back then.
Hating Bon Jovi story, but I want to save that for a late. I know exactly what episode I want to save that for, so I'm going to save that.
Nice.
Barry is thankful for Daryl Dawkins, and Sean, you're probably
who
in the hell
is that?
Daryl. So
yeah,
Daryl Dawkins.
I actually have that. Daryl Dawkins, the question mark.
So Daryl Dawkins was a Philadelphia 76er, a basketball player from 1975 to 1982, and he was responsible for some of the best nicknames ever given to any athlete ever. Throughout his career, he was known as Sir Slam, Chocolate Thunder, and my favorite, Dr. Dunkenstein.
Yes, that sounds a little familiar, even though I don't watch sports, but Dr. Dunkenstein, that's a really good nickname.
And Adam is thankful for Harrison Ford, and I just want to point out that he correctly points out he's really underappreciated in Blade Runner. And I'm like, yes, Adam Goldberg. Blade Runner is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, and then the comment comes out that Harrison Ford sucks. How can you possibly say that Harrison Ford sucks? Is he just does he just feel like he's being like out intellectualized or something because his wasn't as good of a choice? Like how do you even who hates Harrison Ford? You know, fuck him. Sorry.
Well, we know why Barry does say Harrison Ford sucks. It's because he's challenging Adam to a game of ball,
I was trying to figure that out. First, I was like, battle ball, boo ball, and then I was like, oh, ball, like one of the dumbest names ever for a game ever in the history of people.
Yeah, it probably is, and I have a little bit to say about this scene too. So, the rules of ball seem to be, you throw the ball at a hoop in a beanbag chair, and you scream ball, 5 points for a shot to the head. I don't know how many points for a shot to the groin, but we learn later Barry doesn't want to be hit in the groin. I couldn't figure out the rules to this game, but Barry always won. And before we go into that, I just want to point out some things I saw around the basement. Did you see in the background there was a vacuum cleaner with, like, a leopard print bag?
How did I miss that? No, I did not see that.
What did you see?
I saw... which further lets me know how rich they were, a G.I. Joe aircraft carrier.
Yeah, what is that thing?
That thing was so expensive. That was like, and so big. And like, well, not only that, like if you had that, then you had to have the airplane that was on the deck, plus all the action figures, probably plus a helicopter, That was like for rich kids. That wasn't for like people that I grew up with or that I, you know, I had action figures, but I didn't have like I had the Death Star, but that was like a stupid, that was a dumb toy.
Were you the GoBots instead of Transformers kid?
No, I never got into, I was just on the tip of my tongue. Battle of the Planets. So I never really got into like the droid robot type stuff. It was kind of right after my time.
So we learned that Barry's middle name is Norman as he declares victory, and then he puts his name on the ball cup. And I want to point this scene out specifically because the earliest date on the ball cup is 1983, and the latest dates are in 1989. I think this episode takes place in 1989.
Ooh. That's a good
yeah,
look.
Yeah, look at the ball cup. Yeah. When that came up, I was like, I'm going to figure this out. I think this is an 89 episode.
Huh.
And there's some other references.
That kind of scrambles my brain a little bit. Because there was...
Why? What were you thinking?
Well, I also saw in the background that Adam had, like, some giant stuffed animals, like a giant lion. Like, he seemed a little bit old for the stuffed animals. So, if it was 89, it seems like he had already been past that. I don't know. It's a very slippery slope, very watery how the timeline flows, for sure.
I also want to point out one other cool find I have. So the jersey Barry is wearing is a number 31, and that's Wilbert Montgomery, a running back for the Eagles from 1977 to 1984. I was happy to find that out. That was just for me.
To 84. But also the kids tend to be, I mean, and definitely in the 80s, I found that, I don't know about on the East Coast, but definitely in the Midwest, we were always a few years behind. Like, I remember breakdancing up until Breakin' 2 came out, and then by that point, it was that whole wave was already over. I should have quit breakdancing probably 9 months before that movie came out. So, yeah, people in the 80s weren't as hip. And we got hip to stuff a lot later and held on to it a lot longer, for sure.
That's funny. I can't imagine you as a breakdancer.
I was okay. I was intermediate.
Okay. Dude, you have to show me your moves one day.
I've got some scars and some moves to prove it.
Sweet. Anyway, this episode's about to take off because we learned that Marvin's coming over for his annual Thanksgiving visit.
Marvin.
And Marvin, yes, and Marvin is such a deadbeat. And Murray says, why? That I just want to put, this exchange made me laugh. Beth says, because he's the only family you have. And this is who Murray also thinks is his family. He says, that's not true. I have you, what's her name, and the two morons in the basement. Where's Al?
I don't know. Yeah.
Al's
like,
not part of the
that girl, I think he was said, kind of mentioned something about his nieces, maybe, like, but he couldn't remember their names.
So Marvin is as I said, he's a deadbeat. In fact, he dropped out of he flunked out of bartending school that Murray paid for. And every year he comes over and they get into a fight and Marvin storms out. And I also love, and this is another reason I think that the episode takes place in 89. Bev references the movie Cocktail, which she never saw.
Yeah. I love that she never saw that because most people didn't see that until it went to video. That movie bombed at the box office. That was not a hit. Not a hit.
But it's
terrible
weirdly like
movie
one
too.
So Cocktail came out in 88, and it's weirdly like one of the defining early Tom Cruise movies. Like it's got a life. Like people know Cocktail, mostly because of the bartending. Like in Cocktail, is the movie where all the bartenders are just throwing the bottles at each other in like cool ways.
Yeah, I eventually worked in the bar with a guy about 12 years ago who could do all that flair. And it was embarrassing. I mean, he was really amazing at it, but it was embarrassing. Like, while he was doing that, I was getting girls' phone numbers. I was making all the texts while he was just looking like a circus act.
And, Sean, you are a bartender, so I definitely want to ask you about – I want to hear your perspective on bartending, especially Marvin's bartending. But we finally get to meet Marvin, and I think it's, like, the best intro for any character on the show. He pulls into the driveway in a DeLorean. He pulls into the driveway in a DeLorean and just gets out and says, DeLorean.
And the license plate says, Chicks Dig It, which was actually a thing back then. I remember my idiot friend saying that.
Chicks
Dig It? Yeah, it was a catchphrase. It was like, I don't know, like, it is what it is. Like, Chicks Dig It. Or, like, it was terrible.
I love that. And then he just jumps on the car and like he's like, "Hey, Merv."
Yeah. Oh boy. I'm getting so close to this, goddammit. I'm getting so close. I did some research. It sounds a lot like Man in Motion. The theme to St. Elmo's Fire by John Parr.
I love that.
St. Elmo's Fire. It's very close, and I tried to check it against some of other John Parr's other singles, but it wasn't that. It's not. This still isn't the song that it's been taken from, and it's driving me nuts. And I'm gonna find it. It's gonna be a band like. Not White Tiger, but it'll be a name like with Tiger in its name or like White Rain or it's, I don't know. There's going to be some, it's going to click one day. It might take me a few seasons and me just constantly sweating and being angry, but I'm going to figure it out.
Oh, God. I hear St. Elmo's Fire. Now I hear it.
St. Elmo's Fire. I can't sing St. Elmo's Fire while listening to that because it's a little different. St.
Right.
Elmo's Fire.
So Marvin,
Wow, that was a horrible rendition. Speaking of alcohol, there's a shitload of alcohol in their bar. It took me a second,
oh, yeah,
and I was like, oh, it is Thanksgiving. It is Thanksgiving.
But only for the four people in the house that can legally drink.
Yeah.
So I love speaking since you brought that up. What did you think of Marv's bartending style? He picks up a bottle and just kind of like fumbles it around and goes, "Oh, cocktail."
Yeah, that was his failing as a cocktail artist. His mixology back then. But I was impressed with the Blue Hawaiian reference, because blue drinks were a big hit back then, and they're actually a big hit right now. They made a major comeback. The Blue Hawaiian, which is gross.
Yeah,
I wrote that Malibu down. And Blue Curacao. Sweet drinks. Malibu. Yeah, that was a big deal back then. Like, sweet drinks were so big back then. Cosmo was invented back then, the Malibu Bay Breeze, the Sex on the Beach was a big one, Fuzzy Navel, all the sweet stuff.
I love that Marv knows how to pour what he learned in bartending school is, I know how to pour wine and make a complicated Blue Hawaiian.
Yeah, but he couldn't make a gin and tonic, which Pops wanted.
He couldn't make a gin and tonic. Can we comment on Pops' suit in that scene?
I didn't get a good look at his suit in that scene. It was brown and it had a nice collar on it. That's all I remember.
It was the snazziest, like, velvety Hugh Hefner type suit I've ever seen. And I was like, yes, Pops, get it, Al.
Oh, man. I usually take note of his suits and his style and vigor, but I was so overwhelmed by the new character, Marv, and his. I was totally immersed in Marv.
Dan Fogler's a beast. Speaking of Marv, he got an actual job. Not like the past jobs where he was selling timeshares in Sweden or the alpaca farm that Pops has
investment
in.
The alpaca farm where Pops lost a lot of money. Got sick, sick and hurt some kids. Yeah, that's good stuff. Timeshare
so
in Sweden.
One of the running jokes is that Pops, like, is so libertarian with his money. He just throws it around. In fact, we get a few more references to that in this episode. But I also want to point out, my roommate in college lived on an alpaca farm.
What?
Yeah, they can make money.
What?
Yeah. You can make alpaca sweaters.
Well, doing what? I am unlearned in the ways of the alpaca, for sure. I'm showing my weakness.
I assume they wouldn't have a good life in the suburbs of Philadelphia, though. That's my, I would imagine it's a bad investment if you live in, like, the Philadelphia suburbs. And someone's like, I have an alpaca farm. I wouldn't invest. That's my two cents. So, Marv gives Murray $2,000 to start paying him back for all the stuff Murray loaned him, and then they go for a ride in the DeLorean, and they do it to a song, and I just want to, like, hold off on that.
Motorin, what's your
spoilers.
Price for flight?
Dude, it is Night Ranger. Oh, screw it. It is Night Ranger all the way, and Murray knows the lyrics. Can you believe that?
That song was huge. Night Ranger was like a almost like a weirdly like alternative metal rock band that like a lot of us were into because like no one else was really into them, and they wrote like really cool songs, well crafted songs with sick guitar players like Brad Gillis from Ozzy, and then no one really knew about them until Motorin hit, and then that song was pretty big. I feel like it's bigger now because of Boogie Nights?
Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
And this was before Ted Nugent pretty much joined Night Ranger, which was then called Damn Yankees afterwards, which was horrible, by the way. Oh, my God. Fucking Ted Nugent. That's when he started turning into a douche.
Sean, that was a great little deep dive into Night Ranger. Just off the top of your head, I love that.
Oh, yeah. I could talk metal. I was in metal bands, and I was into metal from a very young age. So I know all the nooks and crannies of who was in what band with who, and they're, yeah. A lot of boring stuff like that.
Damn, the Yankees had the one hit High Enough, and, like, that was it.
Can you take me higher?
And you're right. Like, it was, like, Ted Nugent and, like, Night Ranger, and this should have been, like, the rock party, as I once heard on VH1 from Chris Jericho. Like, this should have been a rock, like, purely rock band, and it was, like, High Enough. Like, what?
Well, I think Tommy Shaw from Styx was in that, too. And how they kind of made their claim to fame was they had a big photo of Saddam Hussein on their stage, and Ted Nugent would take out a deer hunting bow and light an arrow and shoot it at Saddam Hussein's face, and the crowd would go wild.
Whoa. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's sick.
That's horrible. That's so
no, I love that.
Dumb.
What a
oh god.
What pageantry?
What's
so
that?
I was gonna say, what pageantry? To fire an arrow at Saddam Hussein's face.
He finally got shut down because it was a fire hazard, but he's more of a douche hazard than anything. Oh, I hate Ted Nugent.
what I want to know is, how does Murray know the lyrics? I still want to know how Murray knows the lyrics to the song. Is he hanging? Remember in the first episode, in the pilot episode, where like he said, the guy at Sam Goody gave me the tape. Has he been hanging around Sam
Goody?
Yeah. What else has the guy been doing?
To get away from the wife, maybe. I don't know.
So we learned that the job Marv has is clearly a Ponzi scheme, selling lotions of the ocean, which are just like lotions with sea salt.
The greatest name for a product ever.
Was sea salt like new in the 80s? Did nothing have sea salt?
I don't remember any of that. Or kelp. Like, that's none of that. Maybe the 90s, but I don't remember the 80s. I wasn't into skincare that much back then. I think Neutrogena might have been the closest. Oh,
okay.
And then he says, come on, just touch my face. Touch my face. I'm not touching your face. Touch my face. He's like, I don't touch my wife's face.
And it's just, he wants to touch his face, but it's just the one part of his face. Like, right under, just touch the one, like, the rest of my, what did he say? Like, the rest of my face is, like, terrible, but this one part is, like, a baby's earlobe.
Ugh, that's so gross.
Yeah.
I was like, did he really just say that?
So back at the home, we get Barry loses at ball, and we get a power dynamic.
Bob, I didn't lose, you lazy-eyed nerd. Does Adam have a lazy eye? He actually said that. He said, well, for a lazy-eyed nerd, I still won or something. I was like, I think I have a bit of a lazy eye, but I've been doing exercises, so it's not as pronounced.
You want the stuff of nightmare, Sean? Wait till we see Adam Goldberg with his glasses off. It is horrifying.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Oh, yes. Marv kicks Murray out of the car, and I love the line where he's like, it just takes $2,000 to get on the ground floor. And Murray's like, you just gave me $2,000. And Marv goes, so you have it. And the car crashes, and it bends the frame. He bent the frame. I love that.
He bent the frame. And for a pyramid scheme, I went on a date with a really hot woman in, like, the late 80s, who wanted me to join a pyramid scheme. She was really, like, elusive, and she was very deflective about what the product actually was. I never really learned exactly, but she did explain that if I got in at the right time with the right amount of money, that people would start making money for me. And then I went to somebody, I was like, I just went out on a date with this gal, this hot gal. They're like, oh, stay away from her. She just wants you to get a hold... be a part of her little scheme, her little racket. It's like, Damn, I thought I was gonna get laid out of this.
No, but you might have gotten a job.
Nope.
Dude, I wonder, I lost everything I didn't have. Do you think, like, pyramid schemes, like, the, like, that was, like, the only way to, like, start a business was have it be a pyramid scheme?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot, like, of that Amway. Amway. You probably never heard about this. I actually knew people who sold Amway and Mary Kay products. Yeah, it was definitely, that was very prevalent back then. But then they outlawed it. But now I forget what they call it. I've seen other forms of pyramid Ponzi schemes out there. But they have a different name for them. Anyway, I digress.
No, we saw the they're still pyramid schemes out there, but we saw the biggest pyramid scheme bust just about like 10, 15 years ago with Bernie Madoff.
Yeah. That actually happened to me, a famous band. I was in a beach house with the drummer, and I think he gave like one of his best friends, who was like a money guy, like about $500,000 to invest in some sketchball scheme that he was getting all his friends to buy into. And the guy went to jail. My friend lost like $500,000.
Dang.
Yeah, that's a bit of scratch.
I want to go back. Can I go back for a moment to when the car crashes? If you notice, the car rolls down the hill and then hits a lamppost and falls. And in the next scene, the lamppost
is gone. Yeah.
Did you notice?
I did not notice that the lamp. Maybe someone ran off with it and started a Ponzi scheme with it.
But you, the lamppost like felt like it was cardboard. Like, how strong?
Yeah, I thought that's the same thing. Well, those things were made like tanks too, but yeah, it looked like it felt like it was made of like cardboard box or plastic or something.
So they go home, and we learn that Thanksgiving, Murray and Marv are in a fight, and we learn that Thanksgiving's actually never made it as far as the turkey out of the oven, which is pretty amazing. And then we get some serious. Before we get on to that, I have a question. DeLorean hotline? Question mark.
Right.
What do you remember about the DeLorean?
I just remember it was only for, like, the uber, ultra, crazy rich. I remember seeing, like, an article in, like, Popular Mechanics about it. It was supposed to pave the way for, like, all future cars. Like, it was so futuristic. It was so like way ahead of its time and advanced. And then it got shut down because apparently DeLorean was selling coke to the DEA, which I didn't know.
I wonder if that was, do you think that was a Ponzi scheme?
That must've been some kind of entrapment or something, or maybe he was funding the DeLorean project with cocaine. I mean, cocaine was so huge in the 80s. You never know. Maybe he was funding the Contras or – I don't know. Now I want to look all that stuff up. That's pretty interesting to me, how this mogul, this entrepreneur, went to jail for coke. Really? Selling – why would you sell coke to a DEA agent? You would have so many minions. Maybe he was so high on coke he just thought he was invincible.
It was the 80s. Like, coke was just running around.
Oh, yeah. Like, Have you ever seen the movie Cocaine Cowboys?
No.
About
I
Miami?
Have seen
go watch that. What's that?
I've seen Scarface.
Scarface is like a little baby, like, playing with I don't know, a puppy dog compared to Cocaine Cowboys. It's insane how many people died because of the violence in Miami. It is so crazy. Oh, my God. What a crazy time to get killed.
So we also get some serious Bev manipulation here. Murray and Marv are in a fight, and Bev is breaking out all the stops. She goes to each of them and says he's sorry. he'll do anything. In fact, gives Marv a check to help for Murray to invest in the Ponzi scheme. But don't ever talk about it. Don't tell Murray that. Don't ever bring this up to Murray again.
She was playing good cop, bad cop, good cop, bad cop, guilt cop, crooked cop. She's a very, very talented woman. And I need to go back to Murray was rocking a very deep maroon members only jacket, which we have not spoken about yet. I can't stress how big those were. Hip hop artists, break dancers, yuppies, the gay crowd, punk crowd, nerds. I had a fucking black one. Like they were, those were huge.
That's awesome. Great cast.
But when they were over though, you couldn't wear one to save your life. You had to get rid of it.
Right.
It was super over. In 89, there's no way. Unless he was so far behind the times, he would not be wearing a members only jacket. That was like early 80s for sure.
We know how hip Murray is. He talks to the guy at Sam Goody.
Yes, true.
He's talking to the guy at Sam Goody who keeps him up to all the stuff. So I don't know what he's doing with a members only jacket.
You know what's funny is you keep bringing up Sam Goody. There was only one mall in my town that had Sam Goody, and I only went there once. I think I bought like one cassette, and it was just because it was super on sale. It might have been like a Led Zeppelin 3 cassette
nice.
I got. But, man, Sam Goody was not where the hip people went to buy music. That's for sure. Mall music.
So,
yeah.
We got to move on because the like all great Goldberg's Thanksgiving episodes, the table is where the climax of the episode is. This is where the goodness builds up to. Murray and Marv have the story about how Sandy Koufax, great Hall of Fame MLB pitcher, threw Murray the ball after a game, but Marv caught it. And then Bev says, "Let's go around and say what we're thankful for." And I just want to read. Adam delivers one of my favorite Adam lines, and I'm just going to read all the things in order. So Erica ate at Lainey, so we have a Lainey mention in our Lainey watch. So Erica's so full she can't even talk, and Bev goes, "Okay, whatever, move on." And Barry says, "I'm thankful for hungry, hungry hippos, which I have set up in the den." And Adam says, and I love this, "I'm thankful for family, which I'm now going to list from most to least powerful." Dad, Pop, Mom, Erica, Adam, Uncle Marv, and dead last Barry. And then takes a badass sip from the cup, from the ball cup.
They sure do pull at the heartstrings, don't they?
Yeah, no.
It's burning me.
And Murray learns that Bev gave Marv is such a Marv is a fuck, and he goes and he divulges that he's thankful that Murray gave him the money for the Ponzi scheme, and Pops goes, "Investment, I'm in," like this with no recourse. And so Marv, that we finally get to see what this lotion does. Base
revuginator. The revuginator. I think I know what I'm talking about. I'm the salesperson. I know what a revuginator is.
Right. In his sales triangle, Marv says, "No, no, no. It's not a pyramid scheme. Somebody makes money at the top, and all the money just flows down."
There's 26
down.
Years. There's 26 years.
And Marv goes, and Murray goes, "You just described a pyramid." And then everybody's
meanwhile, like, everybody's putting on the cream on their faces.
And it is burning. And it is like almost like the Kremps last week. Like, it is just, it turns into chaos in the Goldberg house.
If it's burning, it means it's working.
Right. And then we get our swear. I called it the swear of the week because we usually do. But we get our swear for the ages because this is in every Thanksgiving episode is this swear. Bev says, "It's thank fucking skiving." And it's just wonderful. We always talk about, like, is this
how did I miss
this is great. I love everyone. Well, you missed it, but it's going to be in every other Thanksgiving episode.
Oh, nice. What was I looking at? Oh, didn't they, sorry to take the rails, but they were talking about, they get in the car and they're talking about, he gave up his childhood to raise him. Murray gave up his childhood to raise Marv. But then he was talking about the time he ate detergent. He was sorry. It just smelled really good.
I wrote the line right before that made me laugh too. So yeah, Murray. So Marv decides to leave, and Murray drives him home because the DeLorean doesn't work. And Marv says, "You gave up your childhood for me." And Murray says, "I was glad to do it." And Marv says, "No, you weren't." And then he says, "Yeah, I ate the detergent. I wanted to go to prom, but Marv ate detergent." How, dude, we've all had that moment where we smell detergent and we're like, I could drink this.
Oh. Oh, and kids really? Do. They do the Tide balls. I've never,
So Marv goes in and gives Murray the Kofax ball. That, since we have a little bit of time, I want to go back to the table. When they're telling the story of the Kofax ball, Murray goes, "Yeah, the greatest pitcher of all time couldn't figure out who he was tossing a ball to from 8 feet away." I thought that was great. But Murray gives him the Kofax ball.
Yeah, they pull at the heartstrings. He gives him the Kofax ball. Get back in the car. Thanksgiving isn't over yet.
Yep, and then we get our song. Again, Sister Christian by Night Ranger. Recorded in 83, released in 84. It peaked at number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100. Thank you, Wikipedia. Great
Jeez.
Song.
And then Marvin starts to say that people don't really care about what the drinks taste like, just that they're served with panache. But he's also making the daughter a drink, and Mom comes in and
wait,
out of here.
Wait, Sean, before you go there, we have to – Bev gets her thanks at the table, and it's a very – again, like you say, they pull at the heartstrings. And then we get the post-credit, which you're right, is so freaking funny and probably one of my favorite post-creds. So Marv starts with, so you sure you want to be a bartender? And Erica says, maybe. And he says, that's the spirit. And then, yeah, he goes like, everybody wants to, nobody cares how this drink tastes. Is that how you go into bartending, Sean? You're like, nobody cares as long as I just flip the bottle.
Yeah, exactly. And then I don't know if you could hear what they were listening to. I couldn't tell if they were like listening to Rat or Accept. It was a little tricky. That was really weird. That seemed that was, I think, kind of trying to play that Marv was the cool guy, the cool bartender playing the cool metal music of the time, like the heavy metal, the glam metal rock.
I have no idea. He still does. It's the same bartender hit move he used earlier. Oh, hey, cocktail. That's how I would serve drinks. I would just say, oh, hey, cocktail.
I hope we don't run out of time. But with the actual footage of the mom and the grandpa and or the husband and the looks like young Adam in the kitchen, she's yelling at him and she's like, he ought to be ashamed of himself. And you know what? I do not miss that line from growing up. I didn't like ever being ashamed of myself. I always hated it when my mom or anybody would ever say that. You should be ashamed of yourself.
You don't hear it anymore?
I probably should. Because the amount of stupid shit that I do all the time.
And with that, that's the end of the episode. I thought it was going to take a lot longer, but I'm glad we just kind of burned through. We have about 30 seconds left. Dude, these Thanksgiving episodes are so great, and I'm excited for you to see like the rest of them.
Well, it's going to take me a few years to – well, it'll take me a year probably to get to the next one, but I'm looking forward to it because this is so much fun every week.
I know. I'm glad you're enjoying the show. I'm glad you saw your first your first Thanksgiving episode, and I'm really excited for you to meet Lainey, which I'm not sure is next week, but Lainey's going to come, and we're going to meet Lainey. With that, That was awesome. I'm Ruben Wolf.
I'm Sean Gibbs, and that was super awesome.
Bye, everyone.
See you later.